This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And I have a fascinating book to tell you about today. But first, I want to remind everyone that next Tuesday, Bria Burton is going to be guest hosting Joy on Paper, and she has two wonderful guests, and it's going to be lots of fun to find out her latest sci-fi picks. So make sure that you mark your calendars and join us here on Tantalk Radio and also wherever you can find us online, because Bria just does a wonderful job of talking to these authors who write sci-fi because she loves sci-fi and she is a sci-fi writer. So I'm looking forward to hearing her program next Tuesday. Now, right now, I want to turn to my guest today. It's fascinating, and I'm so happy to start sort of the year off with an author who is multi-talented, and she can talk about different types of writing. So I'm very happy about that. And her name is Catherine Gigante Brown, and the name of her book that we're talking about today is Cry of Silence, but I also want to talk to her about her other writing, because she is multifaceted. Her works appeared in New York Times and all sorts of other magazines. One of the ones that I thought was fascinating is she's appeared in the Italian Journal of Wine and Food. Now, that sounds like the perfect place for somebody from Brooklyn. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, how are you, Patsy? Thanks so much for having me on.
Okay, well, I was hoping you'd still have a Brooklyn accent, but unfortunately, I find everybody from Brooklyn lately, they don't have an accent anymore.
That's funny. I was born and raised there, but I went into business early in my life. I was about 18 when I started working in offices, and somebody told me, "Are you even speaking English?" when I started talking in my Brooklyn accent, so I tried to tone it down.
I know. It's a shame, really, because it's such a great accent. I think it's so much fun. I know when I was traveling in Europe, every once in a while I'd hear somebody with a Brooklyn accent, and I'd stop immediately and just grab onto them and say, talk to me, because it's such a great accent.
Thank you.
Okay, well, the new book, your new book, Cry of Silence, is really a story within a story. It's a fascinating read. I was really enthralled with it. So I want to know how you want to tell the story about it. You want to start with the prologue and explain what the story is about?
Yeah, sure. A disturbing story as well. One of our early readers said that she couldn't read it late at night because she had a problem getting to sleep. So I like to describe it as a sci-fi post-apocalyptic romance. It's an odyssey that describes a woman and her husband's struggles as they go on their first vacation in 5 years and the apocalypse happens. So what do? I mean, your whole life back in New York is gone. Do you continue on your vacation? Do you just kind of curl up into a ball and just give up? So they have a dilemma. I'm trying not to give away too much of the story because some of it might come as a surprise. So basically, the woman is writing down her recollections of her survival and how she traveled through this very difficult landscape, going to the coast of California and working her way up with her husband. And so she's writing it down because she is being asked to write it down so that people will learn from it.
Well, as I said, it's a parallel story because we have this part after whatever disaster we're going to have. And what, you know, when during the pandemic, I was getting a lot of dystopian works, and after the pandemic, everybody sent me dystopian things, and I said, I'm not reading them. I just can't take any more. But when I got this book, it's different. I thought, yes, because there's such a solid love story, and it's in a way very hopeful. it's a real love story, and I thought, well, yeah, I didn't find it as disturbing because nowadays, you know, we're hearing all of these things. I mean, as you have in here, the end of the world, this disaster, that disaster, and then we're living through all these disasters. And we think, well, you know, where's the next one coming from? But when I read this story, first of all, the characters, let's talk about this couple, because I think you define them so beautifully in that very first chapter, where they stop.
Thank you.
On the road. I thought once people read that chapter, they're just captivated by the story.
Thank you. And I wanted to draw them as very good people being in a very difficult situation. So there's no doubt that they love each other, but they're feeling horrible. They have effects of radiation, and they're cranky sometimes. And she's crying a lot. Jen is crying and sad, and they're reminiscing about their old life, kind of hanging on to it by a thread. But you know that they're good people, and you want them to make it. You know that Jen does because she's writing this story. But you're not sure about some of the other characters. And I wanted to lace it also with hope. And also, you know, when the end happens, I didn't want to kind of point fingers, and I didn't want to go into too much detail. And at one point, a newscaster says, well, does it matter who did what or where the attacks came from? You know, it's over.
Well, you know, as you said, first of all, Jen is a wonderful character, and so is Nick, and they have this dynamic between themselves. I love just the simple little understanding that they have. How they, you can just look at each other, or they can just, you know, hold one finger and have a understanding of who they are. And in that first mm-hmm. chapter, I think you define it really so well that's a very it's a very touching chapter, and it also says so much about the world as it is today. So I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Now, I suppose, you know, we have to look at it from the point of view of the world is a mess, and mm-hmm. hopefully in many ways people can read this book and say, well, yeah, but maybe, just maybe, we can start fixing things. And this happens, you know, sometimes a book does open people's eyes and they start actually thinking deeply into a subject. So I'm hopeful after, you know, reading so many dystopian books that were not hopeful at all, that this book offers that, I think, a hope of goodness will triumph.
Thank you. I'm glad that came through, because that was very important for me. I wanted people to believe that things can be corrected. And so much of it has to do with kindness and not prejudging people, as we see later on in the book. And it's tough to talk about it without, as my publisher says, you know, giving away the hidden Easter eggs, you know, that one of the characters who comes in, Philip, you know, people might judge him by his career choice, but he's pretty much kind and just like everybody else. He just chose a different path.
So there's so much, I think, there's such depth in this book that you've put into this story, and it is different from your other books. So what sort of spurred you on to write this tale?
This book I wrote over 40 years ago, based on a nightmare that I had, and I wrote a short story originally, and one of my friends, who's also a writer, says, you know, it's really good, but I think it's trying to be a novel. So I tried it out and I expanded it, and I sent it out to publishers. Nobody bit, and it just kind of sat in my basement for several decades. And then I revisited it, and I said, "Well, this really could be something. I really think it could be." But in the meantime, I had written several other novels. Including the L trilogy, which is based in Brooklyn in the 1930s to the 1960s. And it was inspired by stories in my family history. So much of my work takes place in Brooklyn, and it's, I guess, historical novels. I wrote another novel set in the 1970s about a girl's friendship called Better Than Sisters, and Different Drummer, which is also set in the 1970s, about a female drummer trying to make it. So this Cry of Silence is a huge departure. There are still some Brooklyn roots because these people, Nick and Jen, are from Brooklyn, but it takes a kind of futuristic tone. And I don't really say when it's set, what year it's set. It really doesn't matter. It could be in the past. It could be in the future. And so it was very different for me, and I really enjoyed having that kind of freedom and just kind of telling a parable almost.
Definitely. And when I first, you know, read the first chapter, and I thought it was interesting that you mentioned the Albanian missile crisis and the Ghana hostage crisis. And of course, I think at that time when you got the idea or you had the dream, it was the Cuban missile crisis. So I was thinking, not much changes.
Right. There's always a missile crisis somewhere.
Exactly. So I thought, it was a hint of that Cuban Missile Crisis in the back of my mind that really got me interested in the story, because that's right in the first page of the first chapter. And I thought, she's talking about things that are possible. So I appreciated that. So you put that away, and you, as you said, you wrote this sort of family saga series about Brooklyn, set in Brooklyn, and in between you've done a lot of other writing. What was the first, you mentioned that you were writing from a young age. What was the first thing that you got paid for? When did you get your first paying job for a writer?
Well, I was probably about 13 years old, and one of my poems was selected to represent my high school in a citywide poetry competition in Brooklyn. So I was awarded a $5 prize from the National Association of Pen Women. So I guess that was my first paid gig.
Wow.
And then in high school, I also did an internship for 17 magazine. So I sold poetry and little articles, which helped fund my way through college. And in between, it's really hard to make a living as a writer. So I did office work. I worked as the puzzle constructor for Dell Puzzle Publications, and I was an editor there for a short time. So I've always made a living writing, and when I haven't, secretarial work pays really well. It can be mind-numbing, and but it pays well, and it could fund, you know, your writing endeavors. So that's pretty much what I did.
Well, and every job that you have is, it's just like sort of gives you ideas along the way and things that you learn that you use in your stories.
Exactly. I mean, Jen is an executive secretary, which is something that I did. It's something I knew about.
Well, of course, now they're all personal assistants. Somehow they didn't like that. Yeah, but those were back in the days with a Selectric typewriter.
Exactly, which Jen demands to write her memoirs.
Yeah, well, I love that one of the words that you use. First of all, in future times, people won't be reading books.
Yeah.
Which is happening actually pretty quickly, that people don't read as many books as they used to with the electronics. And of course, you have even more futuristic ideas as people find new ways to write stories. Now, but you have a combination, because you've also, some of your work has been turned into film. So you've had that experience of seeing your words on film, right?
Yes. Yes, I have written some films. I also took a foray into different kinds of essay writing, and I have seen my work in films, a few R-rated films that went straight to video, but it's really interesting seeing your words kind of translated by or expressed by somebody else on screen.
And also on the stage?
Yes. Yes. I wrote a few short plays that were produced upstate New York in the Rosendale Theater's short play competition throughout several years. And that's really cool. That's really amazing.
So going back to the beginning, as a child, were you a great reader?
I was. I was afraid they were going to tell me in the library that I was picking out too many books, that I had a quota. And I loved reading things like Hemingway and Steinbeck, books that really had really deep stories, and the characters were fully drawn and really beautifully drawn, and I always aspired to be like them.
So, you know, this is one of the things that I've been telling so many of my listeners who are dreaming of writing, that one of the things they have to do, and they need to do it, is to fill their minds with books and to read as much as they can.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice. And I think everybody has at least one book in them. And the thing about writing is you just have to do it. You know, it starts with a sentence, and then it becomes a paragraph and a page. And before you know it, you know, your story is kind of telling itself and you're struggling to keep up with it. That's when writing is at its best.
Absolutely. Yeah. One of the things I love to hear from writers is that once you start writing, and that's why I named my program Joy on Paper, even, you know, when perhaps you haven't written anything before and you say, well, I'm not sure if I can write, but once you do it, once you get those first words on paper, it is a thrilling experience.
It is. It really is. And Hemingway used to say, you should write one true thing a day when you sit down to write. Write one true thing, and then you can stop. But the thing is, when you do write one true thing, and it's beautiful, and you just want to keep going, you don't want to stop. So that's the trick. is to get yourself to write one thing that really gives you joy, and then you just want to keep going. And I love the whole idea of your show, to kind of get behind the writing and get behind the words. It's just, I think, fascinating for people to know what it takes to write and what writers put behind their work. I mean, my husband, who's an avid bicyclist, he loves cycling, and he watched this movie about this guy who cycles. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting. That's kind of, you know, what shows like yours do. They show what goes on behind the scenes.
Well, it is so important. I like that you said that there is a book in everyone. And I think that it helps so many people if they will, you know, you don't have to be a best-selling author. You don't have to, you know, become, you know, an acclaimed author. But just being an author is a step in, it just sets you apart. It makes you really special because first of all, you've shown the discipline that you have that ability to sit down and put the words on paper. But you learn so much about yourself as you're writing. You learn all the things that you really want to know about yourself. Can you do something? Can you finish something? And there is nothing quite as satisfying as knowing when you get to that last page, wow, I did it.
Exactly. And you never know who you're going to touch. That's one thing I love about my publisher, Velocil, which is a very small boutique publisher. But Vinnie Corbo, who's also my friend, is the publisher. He formed Velocil because his friends were writing all of these books that no one wanted to publish, but he wanted to read. So it started out him publishing a group of friends, and then it just expanded. And he doesn't publish a huge amount of books every year, but it's always something that has meaning. Like one recently that came out that I had the pleasure and honor of editing was a woman's story about her grown son's addiction to heroin called Midlife Addiction. And she'd never written a book before. Carol is basically a croupier and a dealer in casinos, and she just felt she had to tell her son's story, that he wasn't just an addict, the story behind it. And I told her, you know, you don't know how many people you are helping by telling this story, how many people who have lost their children to addiction. And I think it's just so important to get your words out there.
This is what I've been telling people for, you know, I'm going to be celebrating the 9th anniversary of Joy on Paper in March. And over the years, that's what one of the things, you know, I love talking to best-selling authors, global best-selling authors. It's, you know, always fun and it's always interesting. And I love learning their stories. But I also like these smaller stories that people write, because you're right, they touch people, and sometimes it is exactly the book that you need at a time in your life. And nowadays, mm-hmm. when you can find that book and you can do this search and you can find a book that really goes to the heart of what you're concerned about, that is something very magical.
Right, exactly. You know, there are so many authors who people haven't heard of who have so much to say, you know, and it's really very cool. It's really very amazing.
Well, you know, I have to take a commercial break, but I'd like you to hold on and stay with, you know, listen through the commercials, because when I come back, I want to talk first. I want to talk about your award-winning story, 9/11. And also some more about the process of writing. So hold on, we're going to have a few commercials and we'll be right back, okay?
Sure.
Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Tock Lock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. The holidays are coming up, and that means you might hear some Christmas carolers outside your window. Maybe you might even hear Kevin from the book Kevin Turns Fear into Feet, because Kevin is a great singer. Before Kevin had the courage to sing for a big crowd, it took him a while to conquer his fear. Written by Kevin B. Edwards and illustrated by George Franco, Kevin Turns Fear into Feat tells the story of Kevin, who's a bit scared to sing in a school program because his teacher asked him to. With a story similar to the character of Kevin in the book, the author was inspired to write the book after a teacher brought a third grade student to him who sings. The author's first impression was that she lacked confidence and self-esteem. Due to the author meeting the student, he wrote the book to honor her. Overcoming his own fear, Kevin B. Edwards is now an international gospel singer. This book serves as a great help for kids to overcome their fears and insecurities. When reading Kevin Turns Fear into Feat, I think kids will turn their own fears into feat. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now. Hey everyone, it's Devon Miller, author and illustrator of the Mr. Tickety Talk Clock children's book series, reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest on children's book buzz. A lively celebration of friendship and music is here for readers to enjoy. The Animal Song, written and illustrated by John T. Howley, is here. A crocodile, a big brown bear, and a weasel form a traveling band and play for the other animals in the woods. But when winter comes, the animals in the woods head to bed, leaving the traveling band to find a new audience to hear their sound. Jaunty first sketched the main characters back in 2019. While waiting to hear if his story would get published, he made models of the characters from the story to calm his nerves. Having a lot of fun making them, the book eventually got published. While being a story, The Animal Song is also, well, a song, with original music composed by the author and illustrator himself, John T. Howley. Perhaps when you read The Animal Song, maybe you'll also sing along. This is Devon Miller reporting for Joy on Paper. For more book buzz involving children's books and authors, head on over to radio-joyonpaper.com and click on Devon Miller's Book Buzzes. I think it's about time that I buzz out now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Hurting Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Hurting Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Hurting Butterflies.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest, Catherine Gigante Brown, and the name of her book, Cry of Silence. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, great. I'm so happy. You know, we had a commercial a few minutes ago about a book written by Jim Lamb called Hurting Butterflies, and it's a book of poetry. And you mentioned that you won a prize, your first sort of paying gig as writing a poem. I am a great proponent in reading poetry. Poetry really, I think, is, there are so many benefits to it, but definitely for writers, it is a real discipline in using words. And that's what writers have to learn. They have to have a discipline. And they have to first, they have to love words, and then they have to learn how to use them strategically and intelligently. So for you, poetry obviously meant a great deal to you.
Yes. I mean, and poetry also teaches you how to encapsulate in words in such a precise manner and kind of get to the heart of the matter. And it helps with all kinds of writing. I take part in a poetry series when I'm in town. There's a poetry reading series in Brooklyn called Ken Siegelman's Brooklyn Poetry Outreach. And we welcome people, you know, from kids to people who have been writing for decades. And I think it's so important to share your words and to get used to reading in public. It can be terrifying, but I think it's such a nurturing thing that, you know, we were read to when we were children. And it's really nice to go into a setting where someone is reading to you. And so poetry is a great way to do this, to go to readings and to, you know, to take part and to listen.
And I think, you know, in schools today, if they're teaching poetry, sometimes I don't know if they're teaching English, you know, how to grammar, because, you know, we hear these stories of kids who can't read in school. I mean, I can't, there's no way I can imagine in my mind. I can't see a kid graduating from high school and not being able to read. It boggles my mind. It's something I can't get my hands around, because really, if you read to children at a young age, if you really get them involved like you did in writing poetry, in writing little stories, so much of the love of books comes from having people read to you, and then encouraging you to read back. Exactly that. And do you understand? Can you get your head around it? How do people graduate from high school and they can't read?
It's very difficult. I mean, with, you know, considering learning disabilities and things like that, I can understand it. But that's not the norm. And I just think it's so important in every facet of life. And even, you know, I know kids who taught themselves how to read at 4 years old so that they can read the instructions on video games.
It's difficult for me to understand, because, of course, I was reading at a young age and I love reading. And I learned to read from comic books because we were very poor. We didn't have a lot of books in the house. So I think... life is so much better if you can read, and if you enjoy reading books, it really does expand your whole outlook.
Yes, it does. And now, you know, with audiobooks, especially if you have reading challenges and learning challenges and you learn better by hearing, you know, there are so many audiobooks out there, and it's so easy to listen while you're doing chores or, you know, a new world just opened up for you by reading.
So now for you, when you were writing, as I mentioned, you've been published in a lot of places. How did you get to that point where you were published and picked up by the New York Times? What was your process for that? Because there are so many different types of writing, and one of the ways is to get yourself published in magazines and newspapers. How did you do that? Was it your connection with 17?
Partly that, and partly there was something called Writer's Digest, which I think still exists, where it lists all kinds of publications and what they're looking for and what they pay. And now, unfortunately, with the internet, is a lot of places are looking for content but don't want to pay. And for me, I just sent out a whole bunch of material, and suddenly somebody actually bit. I'm sorry, there's a different phone ringing in my house. It's not mine. So, you know, I just started sending out my work. And that's the way I got published, was just sending out my work. And different things, like you mentioned the New York Times essay during October, Breast Cancer Month. They have something called The Faces of Breast Cancer, and a friend of mine suggested that I send something to them, my story of being a breast cancer survivor, and I also wrote a poem called One in Eight, and they published it, the Times published it, and I was thrilled. And so a lot of things that I write just come out of just being, living through something.
And putting it down on paper. Now, tell us about the Autumn of 9/11 essay that you wrote, and it also won an award.
Yes. That was through the Brooklyn Public Library, and they had a picture called, it was like a photo essay contest called My Brooklyn, and I sent in something, an essay and a photograph that I had taken of my husband kind of throwing my son, who was a toddler at the time, up into the air with a backdrop of Manhattan with the absent Twin Towers behind us. And I wrote an essay about that experience. And I entered it into the competition. And to my surprise, they selected it. And one of the judges was Dennis Hamill, and he read the essay at the awards ceremony, and he prefaced it by saying, when I read this one, it just blew me away. My husband's a firefighter. He was a firefighter who responded to 9/11. So our experiences were extremely profound and deep, with losing so many friends and him almost losing his life. And it was a comfort that so many people could relate to it.
Oh, that's a beautiful, that is, wow, that's amazing. And as you say, you know, you just have to keep writing and be persistent. And entering competitions is one of the best things to do, because even if you don't win, just the fact that you've entered it and you've worked hard on something that you've written. But you often, even if you're not the first place winner or something, you get feedback, which helps you become a better writer.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes people are too busy to give feedback, but you just kind of try to perfect yourself.
Now, of course, now with your publisher and with like the new book, and now that we're finished with, well, we hope finished with the pandemic and people are out and about again, well, how do you go about marketing? What's, you know, a lot of writers are having difficulty with marketing. What do you do? What has been successful for you?
It's true. I mean, we publish through Ingram, and Ingram has their own way of listing with bookstores and in catalogs. And we're also, my publisher also tries very innovative things, like, you know, since there is kind of a sci-fi bend to this book, we queried different science fiction magazines, and they published a few chapters. So it was pretty cool. Hopefully we reached a large audience, but we had a whole bunch of people. We have a whole bunch of people who hopefully read it. So that was kind of innovative. And we're doing like Zoom readings and things like that. I still feel a little uncomfortable asking people to cram into a tiny bookstore, because, you know, COVID hasn't left us 100%, and especially during the holidays, there's a huge surge of it. So so we're just trying to do innovative things and zoom in onto a new audience. And shows like yours are just wonderful. I learned about you through my friend Patty O'Donnell, who said, yeah, Patsy's always looking for authors. And so I sent you a copy, and here we are. And I really appreciate you.
Well,
you
that's
know,
why
a lot of people don't
like
unknown.
To do this.
That's so great.
As you heard at the bottom when we played some book buzzes that we did for children's books, one of the things we do here, we do these little promos for authors so that we give them to the authors, they're free of charge, and the authors can use them on their social media. Which makes, because social media can get very boring, you know, if you don't have something new all the time. And so that's why we do these book buzzes and we do little videos for authors. We do as much as we can to promote authors because, like this book, this, you know, I think it is such a good book. Cry of Silence is a great read. And I think everybody who reads it, and as if we can get people to read that first chapter where they get to meet Jen and Nick, I think they will. It will be a winner because you have created a love story here, a beautiful love story, set with all the other problems that are going on in the world. But that is the shining light in it, and it takes it right through the book. So anything I can do to help authors reach the readers, and I'm more and more this year, 2024, I really want to tackle this getting readers. It's sort of becoming an obsession with me when I discovered the illiteracy rate in the United States. We have over 40, 45 million people who are illiterate. I mean, they don't read anything. It's almost too much. I mean, we're number 51 in the literacy ratings in the world. I mean, this is ridiculous. And so many people don't read. And so I'm doing more and more, and 2024 is going to be my year of reaching out to people, and people have to talk more about reading and recommend to people books, because so often people will read a book and they'll like it, but then they won't go out to do the next step to do the review on Amazon or Goodreads to help spur the book along. And this is one of the things that I think it's so important. Now, of course, as an author, you're out there telling people, read my book, but it's just in general, everybody should be saying to other people, have you read this book? You know, here's a copy. Or just give people books and say, you know, I don't mean give your book, you know, free of charge, but I mean, give people, say, start reading. Just read. And once you start reading, because, you know, it only takes, 9 hours, 10 hours to read a 350-page book. And people are spending 9 hours in a few days, just scrolling the internet for nothing, and nothing gets into their heads. Whereas one book like this, it really makes you think about the world and about, well, could this happen and can we avoid it? So it's just, I think this is a fine book, beautifully written. You're very good at capturing the atmosphere of a situation, of a location, wherever you take your characters. So I just hope that I can help, you know, in some way to get you a bit bigger audience and to spread the word that there are wonderful books like this, not necessarily published by, you know, big publishing houses, because as you said, a small publishing house is looking for a book that is very special. And Cry of Silence is a special book.
Thank you so much. And thank you for giving lesser-known writers exposure on your show. I mean, there are so many venues like there's something called Book Reporter, and they do newsletters, weekly newsletters, and they review books and highlight authors. It's never independent authors. And I've often written to them about this. My publisher has reached out to them. You know, it's wonderful for you to talk about Colleen Hoover's book, but, you know, what about somebody who's lesser known, like me, for example, or another woman that I know, Yael Adler, who wrote a book about being adopted from Romania in the 1980s, and she wanted to discover her family, and she did. You know, like, what a beautiful story. Why don't more people know about this? So you give a voice to the authors who don't really have a voice.
Well, that's my goal, because I love books. I think they do change lives. Sometimes a book will come into your hand and it absolutely changes your life forever. And it's something memorable. It's something that you want the author to be successful and to write the next book. But it all comes down to actually getting people to read. And I'm working on that for 2024. Part of the thing, my goal is to really reach out to people and say, fill your life with words, with interesting and stories that will help you to become a better person. And I think Cry of Silence will do that. Now, you have a nice website, and you have on your website, tell us about it, because you have some additional stories and like blog posts.
Yes, I do. My friend Val designed my website, and I think she did a great job. It's very understated. I have links to my books so that people can purchase them if they'd like. There's also a portfolio that list has links to several of my essays and articles. And I kind of like the whole idea of giving people a taste. It's almost like a smorgasbord of the different types of writing I do. And there's some poetry there as well. And also a gallery of photographs, not just of me, but of people, friends who've come to my readings. And I really... many years later, I'm very proud of it, and I'm glad it's out there. And thank you for bringing that up.
And it's C.G. Brown Writer. C.G. Brown Writer.
Yeah.
And as you said, it's a very nice website. I like that you use the word smorgasbord, because it's really great that I went through the stories. There's different subjects, different styles. It's a fine website, and I will post about it on my website. I will upload it, a link. But again, I want to thank you so much, Catherine, for joining me today. It's Catherine Gigante Brown. Her books are available online. You can go to her website, cgbrownwriter.com, and you're also on Facebook and all of those things.
Yes, and my publisher is The Lawful, and they have a very good website that's very comprehensive and has a bunch of very, very talented, unique writers.
Okay, well, thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. It was a joy to talk to you, and I really appreciate the time you spent with me.
Thank you so much, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
All right, bye. You know... As she said, you know, it is sometimes so frustrating for me when I get a good book like this that I really want to share with everybody. And, you know, it's hard for authors to get recognized, but I think her writing is really superior. It is really, she is a fine writer. And all you have to do is read that first chapter and you will be hooked, I tell you. On this story. And even though it, you know, well, we don't know. We just have to hope that the world is going to learn something from the recent 2023, which I am happy is gone. 2023 was not a great year for so many people in the world.
And perhaps there is hope in 2024 of making it a better place, but it comes always to what people are doing and what people are paying attention to. And when I discovered that so many millions of Americans do not read anything, it really shocked me and frightened me, because if you don't read, if you don't, you're not reading anything at all, you are really missing the story behind the stories that they are putting in front of you on television and on the internet. You have to be able to read and to understand what you're reading. So this is I think one of the biggest problems that we're facing right now. Lack of people who actually read books and think clearly and logically. Something's happened in our educational system because it's ridiculous. I'm like on the crusade this year. I want to understand it, and I want everybody to reach out. And if you have anyone in your family, any children in your family, you make sure that they are not only reading to grade, that they're reading three grades ahead, because there's no reason in this day and age that children cannot read. It's just unacceptable. It's completely unacceptable, because you want to be able to read. And well, then when you get to be a good reader, you can read a book like, one of Carol J. Perry's Witch City Mysteries. Those are always so much fun. You know, I just get a kick out of them. So I've been thinking a lot about her books, because she's now up to 15, and which is a nice number. And I'm hoping that, you know, it would make a wonderful, wonderful television series. So somehow we have to get through to Hollywood and say, you know, we need some new product. Do you spend your time going on these streaming channels and you go through all these little squares and you say, no, no, no. Oh, I wouldn't look at that if you paid me. No, no. You know, and you go through those things and you say, what are these stories? And either the remakes, if one more person makes a remake of Little Women, I'm going to go crazy. I mean, really, really, really. Nobody needs a remake of Little Women or any of the Jane Austen book. Please don't make remakes. Pride and Prejudice has been done. Get the book. You know, so please get a Carol J. Perry book. From Witch City Mysteries, and maybe we could start doing some kind of thing to promote it straight to Hollywood. Pick it up already. Make a fun series. Anyway, everybody, it's the beginning of the year. It's really exciting that next Tuesday, Bria Burton is going to be the guest host on Joy on Paper, and her guests are G.C. Jensen and Alan Dean Foster. And Alan Dean Foster wrote Prodigals, and that's a fantastic book, and so we're looking forward to that. And of course, you know, just having Bria do a guest hosting gig is so much fun, because she is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful author herself, and I'm so happy that she's going to be here on Tuesday. Meanwhile, everybody have a wonderful weekend. Say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed, and he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Read a book and give a book to somebody. Bye-bye now.